few minutes. There's one problem I could tell you about, which I tried to study. Strange enough, one can do something on a computer. It's a sort of simple, mutilated version of the four-color problem. As a little amusement, and to digress from my main theme, I can tell you that about this old problem, which is the following. You have a map on a sphere or on a plane, a fictitious map, anyone you like to draw, of countries, which you have to color in such a way that adjoining countries, countries which have a boundary in common, should be colored by different colors. The conjecture is that you can always do it with four colors. Nobody managed to prove it. Now, people have tried successfully using the computer, push the number of countries for which you can still assert that this is true up to, let's say, 70. I don't know what the record is. But here was another little variation of my own, which involves a little infinity. So it's not entirely finite problem. Imagine that you have a strip, a band of countries, each composed of an assembly, say, of unit squares. The line is infinite, but the width is finite. Say the width is only three unit squares thick. How about drawing countries only in this band? Is the conjecture true? It was proved by some student. But recently, in the last few weeks, using the computers, some former student of mine who works in Colorado, Mr. Cavender, managed to prove this thing, four-color conjecture, for bands of width 7. And this is tremendous work. Millions of cases had to be discussed, but at least that much. It's not a full infinity, but a little bit of infinity. The reason I mention is that mathematicians, who are perhaps tend to be a little snobbish, are not satisfied with anything that is purely finite as much as if there is even an inkling of infinity. So in order to hook mathematicians, so to say, in some of my own modest or humble attempts to interest them in some problems of mathematical biology, I always try to formulate it in such a way that they have sense not only for a finite end, but for a true infinity. Now, all this is a sort of psychological, merely, stratagem, but it will cease to be so in the future when, as I said, some elements of true infinity will be, by use of so-called quantifiers, mirrored on operations on existing computers. I know, because when I discussed this with von Neumann, that was also his not only hope, but belief. I use the word quantifier. I don't think all of you know what that is. Now, the Boolean expression, Aristotelian expressions in logic, which are and, or, not, that the machines do well. But mathematicians love expressions like the one I'm now to utter. There exists an X, such and such. Now, this exists is a quantifier. And the other quantifier is, for all X, something is true. So there are just two quantifiers. It sounds very innocent, but they have different character from the purely Aristotelian operations. And these have not yet been somehow pictured, even by approximation, on a machine, except in the most sort of childish way. So this is one of the possibilities, in addition to this constantly improving way of surveying larger and larger number of cases, which ultimately give, perhaps by natural induction, insight into the true basis of, say, physical facts, or if you want, sociological things. Now, if there are a few more questions, I think there's still a few more minutes for questions left, or I could talk about these von Neumann discussions for a long, long time, but.
Hello. While we're talking about von Neumann, I thought it'd be interesting to throw a light on another little facet of his. The only trouble is that my talk is hedged by, I don't know yet how classified this is, so I'm going to be extremely vague, but it does throw an interesting light on Johnny von Neumann. what they were doing at Los Alamos, Stan has already mentioned the sacred word implosion. I mean, I should say 9/10 of the world now know implosion is sometimes used in bombs. However, what they were doing here in those early days wouldn't work. It involved more or less exploding round something and imploding it, and it just wouldn't work. Well, the reason it wouldn't work is because they were considering explosive as if it was something that burnt, whereas, of course, really, the phenomenon of explosive going off is a wave process. So when it became realized by one or two people that you really had to take account of this wave process, people, at least a person, started to think about optics and worked out sort of how you could possibly make points that started the explosive all converge onto one point. Well, when you do the mathematics of this, you emerge with fourth order surfaces between explosives and so on, and you pretty well had to fill the rest of the world with certain kinds of explosive in order to make it do this. Well, the equations were worked out, and it looked as if it was a lovely idea, but it was it was not practical. I remember Johnny listening to this talk and going away, and the next day coming out with an extremely snappy piece of geometry, which is not present in geometrical optics, in optical things, which solved the problem completely. The very nice piece of geometry which he saw overnight. So that was, and John von Neumann's contribution was really why the implosion worked, because of this snappy piece of geometry. I can't tell you what it's called.
Well, of course, he had many brilliant insight into many problems. This was just one of them. I think Dr. Howard has...
I have to hold it, sorry. Arthur Burks, University of Michigan. I wanted to remark first that the idea that von Neumann used of a cellular automaton to develop his theory of self-reproducing automata came from a discussion he had with Stan Ulam, came from Stan. And I wanted to ask Stan a question about the antecedents of this. In your book, you tell of early thoughts you had on self-reproducing automata, at least from the point of view of states or structures or patterns back in Poland.
Yeah,
could you say a little more about
curious,
that?
Well, this is just a reminiscence. In 1930, I would say in 1933 or 4, I and some other mathematicians, Basel and Banach, who was an older professor, a very brilliant mathematician, had a discussion on the coffee house about ways to make some assembly, mechanical system, multiply if given enough food or material, raw material around it, and how to do it. You see, by the way, it was Maser who invented the idea of infinite games, which only mathematicians can play. And that was just the beginning of the concept. This, by the way, the idea of self-reproduction of the automata, which von Neumann put so much store in, turns out not to be so very deep and not to be so essential or crucial for the, it seems to me. Tragedy, I should now perhaps say that to you. In a way, it's like Moses who saw the promised land only from a distance. Von Neumann did not live to see the work of Watson and Crick on how the self-reproduction really works in an incredibly simple way. It's hard to guess. He did not live to see all the developments in physiology or anatomy in the brain, or the ubiquity of the little computers, or the whole improvement in speed, etc. What remains to be done is not so much, seems to me, the study of developing reproduction itself, but differentiation, that is to say evolution, true evolution, which depends on sex or nonlinear phenomena, that's what it amounts to, and on the survival of the fittest in competition. You see, that's the next chapters of the theory of automata, which, of course, Professor Hurd could tell you much more about than I can.
Yes, he was concerned with those problems and did think about them, but you're right, he wasn't able to work on them.
Dick Lamer, University of California, Berkeley. Stan, you began with some comments about new machines and how they're going to be more parallel and so on. I want to remind you,
thank you, sir,
that our first electronic computer was highly parallel, and it was Johnny von Neumann who ruined it by making it a sequential machine.
Well, you mean in the sense that my five fingers are parallel, or was it much more than that? Well, our conscious, of course.
John Mockley will tell you all about that, yes, in due course.
That's good. You see, our conscious reasoning on things we write down is linear, but our real search in memory and the process of thought certainly goes on very, very many channels. See, from Neumann's time, I'll finish in 1 minute, don't worry. I remember in the discussions with von Neumann about the brain, the great marvel that there are many billions of neurons. And perhaps he told me, I didn't know that, he told me, between some of them, there are as many as 50 or 100 connections, in the center perhaps 1,000. Now, today, this number 50 or 100 is 5,000 or more, and in the central region, maybe 100,000. So the complications grow even in anatomy, not only in foundations of physics or in astrophysics. Everything becomes much more complicated than we thought of at first. Thank you.